This is an AMI podcast. This is an AMI podcast.
I'm Dave Brown, and this is a podcast version of AMI's Morning Show, now with Dave Brown. Catch the live broadcasts weekdays from 9 to 11 a.m. Eastern on AMI Audio and AMI TV. Welcome back. It's Now with Dave Brown on AMI Audio and AMI TV. The federal government is banning travelers from three more African countries. Egypt, Malawi, and Nigeria have been added to the list. Last week, the government restricted travel from seven countries in southern Africa. Public Safety Minister Marco Mendicino outlined the government's rationale.
Last week, we quickly announced and implemented new measures at our borders and beyond in response to the Omicron variant, and we are making further precautionary adjustments again today as the situation evolves. Those measures will work to slow down possible importations of the Omicron variant of concern.
NDP leader Jagmeet Singh says testing and quarantining are the more effective tools than travel bans to stop the spread of new variants. He says that approach seems to have worked best in other countries,
as opposed to specific bans on flights. That seems to not be a strategy that actually works to keeping people safe. And I'm open to measures that keep people safe and using those tools in a good way that prevent the spread. But I am also critical when the measure doesn't actually achieve the outcome.
South Africa's envoy to Ottawa is calling Canada's ban on travel from southern African countries as both shocking and knee-jerk. For his perspective on this, we're joined by veteran political correspondent Craig Oliver. Craig joins us from Ottawa. Hey, good morning, Craig. Nice to chat with you once again.
Good morning, Dave. Welcome back.
Nice to be back. So, Craig, some critics have suggested that border closures are a bit heavy-handed, but do we have some understanding that politicians need to move fast when it comes to the COVID file?
Dave, I think the federal government's response to this expressed a level of anxiety, which is a bit of an issue itself. It reminds me of hearing "go to your battle stations" as an order, and when you get there, we might be able to tell you who your opponent is and how you should respond to it. The concern here is that the government has played into the widespread fear that was beginning out there by taking such a strong, dramatic stand against whatever. And remember that this is a reversal from where they used to be, which is when they used to say, along with the international organizations, they used to be able to say, we're not too worried about this. And in particular, remember that, you know, the best way to do this isn't to shut down your borders and shut out other countries. That in the past has not worked because by the time they get there to this point, usually the disease is already in the community and there's nothing you can do to stop that. Somehow they've changed their views and they think this time it'll work. Many scientists are saying they doubt it will.
Craig, let's jump into a different element of some of these new restrictions in place. The new restrictions include increased testing for people arriving from abroad. Let's hear from Health Minister Jean-Yves Duclos as he lays out the new policy.
All air travelers coming from outside Canada, apart from the United States, will now need to be tested at the airport in which they are landing in Canada, whether they are vaccinated or unvaccinated. They will then need to isolate themselves until they get the result of their test.
So, Craig, we heard it there. Travelers from the U.S. are going to be exempt from the requirement. Doesn't that feel like a bit of an odd inconsistency?
It does, and it is. But just think of the number 15,000. There are 15,000 trucks loaded with Canadian merchandise and American merchandise going back and forth across the border every day. It would be a huge blow to the economy to slow down any more than it has already been slowed down. Whole business of supply dynamics, it just is not possible. And especially when we have the free trade agreement. I don't think in that regard. I think what the Canadians would have liked to have done was say, all of America is exempt except if you're from Florida or if you're from Texas or you're from some of the other states, which are conservative states and who are basically opposed to all of this, you can't come in. But if you're the with the good American states, who are generally tend to be Democrats, we welcome you. Mm-hmm. You see what I mean? But that's not possible to do that.
I definitely see what you mean there in regards to the picking and choosing. Hey, Craig, this next question is a little more abstract, but COVID is clearly going to linger within the political landscape for some time. Last week, President Joe Biden's press secretary, Jen Psaki, suggested the pandemic is the entire reason for the president's slumping approval rating. How much will COVID continue to haunt incumbent politicians as they head into re-election bids?
You know, I think that we have to reach a point where we're maybe going to have to accept the idea that these new variants constantly popping up are a permanent state of affairs. And all of us are going to have to learn to live with it in the way we learn to live with the flu. And we're going to have to take the appropriate measures all the time. I don't think anybody should believe that these variants and the original causes for them are going to go away. They're not going to dry up and fly away. They're going to be with us, I think, for a long, long time. And all of us are going to have to adjust our thinking to that. And it won't be easy. But just think of one benefit here. I think this is going to put insupportable pressure on people who refuse to take a vaccination. Because the real problem here isn't only the virus itself. It's the fact that we have so many wide open holes because so many people refuse to take the vaccination. A wall of vaccines is what we need to get this under control, and we're not really getting that.
Mm. Craig, let's jump into some of the granular detail of Canadian politics here, some real nerd stuff. So the government House leader, Mark Holland, says he has every expectation the Commons committees will be up and running before Christmas. Now, before the House of Commons rises for that 6-week recess at Christmas, the government does want to pass 3 pieces of legislation, including a bill on COVID benefits and a legislation on a ban on conversion therapy, which we'll get to in just a couple of moments. But without unanimous consent, all legislation must be studied at designated House committees. And with less than 3 weeks until the House rises, none of those committees have been commenced. So, Craig, here we go. The various parties have been talking about what the committees will look like, but seeing as how a bunch of opposition parties spent the entire election saying how it was unnecessary and how Canadians want Parliament to work for them, should there be an extra onus to get these committees up and running?
Well, there is. But there's a limit. I mean, remember, this is a minority government. They can't be calling the shots. To a very large degree, the decisions that will be made about when and what legislation will be dealt with are really up to the opposition parties. But I think what really is most interesting of them all is this whole idea of conversion therapy. That divides the Conservative Party very badly once again. Remember, this is the second time around for that legislation. It's been brought back, but much tougher than it was, far tougher than it had been before. You could almost go to jail. I mean, in fact, I think you can under some of the legislation involving conversion therapy. And so I think what the federal government wants to do is exploit this weakness on the part of the Conservatives. They're going to go into the House of Commons when this legislation comes up for a vote, and as many as 20 Conservative MPs are going to be voting against conversion therapy, which the United Nations has described as torture.
Yeah, the policy of the ban is good policy. And as you mentioned, there might be an opportunity here for the Prime Minister and for the Liberal government to actually potentially embarrass Erin O'Toole, the leader of the opposition. Not that I want to be so cynical to suggest that's purely it, but this is an opportunity to offer some embarrassment to the leader of the opposition, isn't it?
Is it ever? Not only is a ban on conversion therapy, I'm sorry. Not only is it good policy, it's even better politics. Because once again, we're seeing the Conservative Party way out there in terms of being in touch with the midstream of Canadian thinking. There's a vastly more people are opposed to conversion therapy than there are who support it. Mm-hmm. And they all tend to be very conservative.
Craig, let's get to one more story, and it's coming from abroad. Barbados is dropping its connection to the Queen. The Caribbean country has declared itself a republic. The drive to become a republic started more than two decades ago and culminated with the island's parliament electing its first ever president last month. Let's actually hear from Prince Charles, who was at a ceremony earlier this week.
You write the next chapter of your nation's story, adding to the treasury of past achievement, collective enterprise, and personal courage.
Craig, there's a lot to kind of get into in regards to Barbados politics and Barbados history, but we're probably going to gloss over that one and take this thing back to Canada. Do you anticipate that Canada may end up having a more robust conversation about what to do with our relationship with the Queen in the coming years?
I think we will continue to live with it, although it will be harder to live with once Prince Charles becomes King Charles, for this reason, that the Queen is an immensely popular person. She's been in the throne for decades and decades on decades. And she's never put a foot wrong. She has been a wise monarch. And I think as a person, one can admire her. And so it makes it a lot easier for us to accept this limitation on our sovereignty, which is that the Queen of Canada is our head of state, but she's also British, and she comes from Parliament in Britain. Mm-hmm. So this is hard for some people to take. But the fact is, we have something that Barbados doesn't have, and that is this is all written into the Constitution and very hard to get rid of. Jean Chrétien was the justice minister in the Trudeau government when they brought home the Constitution. That was a moment when Canada could have ended the monarchy as our head of state and with all of the other connections. But Chrétien wouldn't do it because he's somewhat of a monarchist. Good for him. And so we have it in the Constitution, and that's almost impossible to make change.
Mm. Craig, you alluded to it there that Queen Elizabeth is quite popular. Do you think that potentially when she passes and the leadership passes on to Prince Charles or Prince William, do you think at that moment it may be easier to have that conversation?
I think it absolutely would. No doubt about it. Charles is not exactly a heroic figure, if you want to put it that way. And I think the word to use about the Queen isn't maybe popular. I think popular is right, but admirable is the word that leaps to mind in terms of her personal behavior. Remember, Charles was fooling around on Diana for a long time before she finally caught on. He had a mistress who he finally dumped Diana for his mistress. And that is... not exactly an admirable way to act in life, some would say.
Yeah, maybe not befitting of a king, at least not a king in the modern age. Craig, thank you very much for this check-in. We always enjoy catching up with you. We'll talk to you again next week.
You bet, Dave. I love to be here.
You've been listening to Now with Dave Brown. Hit the subscribe button on any podcast platform and leave us a rating and a review.